Good, Rand Paul's with us. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Senator Paul, and to talk about what's going on. And we haven't talked, I don't think, since the November election. And obviously, a lot of things going on in Washington. Busy times you guys are doing. Let's talk. Kind of give us an update from your perspective. What's going on in Washington these days?
Well, you know, we've been all smiles since the election. We think it's a real chance to try to, you know, get the country going in the right direction again. When Donald Trump was the president the last time, we were able to lower taxes, lessen regulation, and business boomed like it hadn't in a long time. We had some of the lowest unemployment numbers ever. We had amazing economic growth. And the average person, I think, was about $5,000 richer over the 4 years of the Donald Trump term. We're hoping to do that again. One of the big things we need to do is preserve the tax cuts from 2017. If we don't preserve those, it'll be a $4 trillion tax increase that American taxpayers would have to pay. One of the nice things about it, if people noticed, is that your standard deduction went up. So the standard deduction is about $12,000 a person now, which means that if you got a husband, wife, and two kids, basically you have a $50,000 worth of income that's deductible. And it's kind of nice because it doesn't have to be itemized. And so a lot of people file their taxes now and don't have to keep up with their expenses. They just deduct their wife and their two kids, and they're up to $50,000. So we got to preserve that, and that's really what we have to, you know, do right out of the block. The other thing we need to do, though, is cut spending because we have a $2 trillion deficit annually. Our interest payment is almost $1 trillion just in interest now, and this threatens the country. And so I'm working very hard to make sure that Republicans don't forget about the spending problem.
Well, you go into the new session of Congress starting next year with a Republican Senate, Republican House, and a Republican president to come in January. Do you feel like you have a better chance at maybe getting some of this to the goal line this time?
Yeah, I think we really do. And now that we're in charge of the Senate, my hope is to be chairman of the Homeland Security Committee. With that committee, I plan on continuing to point out government waste, but also continuing to investigate the origins of the COVID virus. I believe that it started with research that was funded by Anthony Fauci in China. And they've been very secretive and tried to hide the information on this. I think with the new administration and their cooperation, as well as a court subpoena, I think we're going to get to the bottom of this finally and get the information out.
Be interested to watch. Speaking of things going on in Washington, I think, I don't know if it was the country surprised or maybe not surprised at what President Biden did with Hunter Biden over the weekend, in fact, partnering. Were you surprised to see that come out, or can I expect that, or what?
In some ways, yes. I mean, because he was so adamant that he wasn't going to pardon him. All along, I suspected he was lying, and this sort of gives more credence to the thought from the public that so many people can't be trusted, that he said over and over again he wouldn't do it, and then he did it. And not only pardon him for specific things, like, oh, well, anything my loser son Hunter did for the last 10 years, I'm going to pardon him for. Didn't even really get too specific, but anything from 2014 to 2024 that he did, we're going to pardon him for. And I don't know, people look kind of askance at that. Every day somebody's, you know, sometimes makes mistakes with their taxes, makes mistakes with registration of this and that, and they go to prison. But when the president's son does it, you know, pretty serious errors with guns and also with drugs and with prostitution and with his taxes, to go scot-free, I think, is an insult to anybody else who's ever, you know, been prosecuted in this country.
Obviously, they're looking at the results of the November election. You have to say, did our country send maybe a message to Washington, D.C. and folks up there about really how they feel about how things are going and what they want to see happen?
I think so. I think people don't want to see an open border, and I agree with them. They don't want to see criminals allowed into our country with no screening, no vetting. And they really don't want to, you know, be insulted by this idea that we're going to spend our money, we all work hard, they're going to take our taxes, and they're going to fly these people who come into the country illegally up to New York, put them up in a hotel, give them a credit card, feed them three meals a day. And then they flew one of them. He said, oh, I want to fly down to Georgia. I think I can get a job in Georgia. They fly him down there at your expense, at our expense, and then he killed Lake and Riley. I mean, the compilation of so many insults to her family, to the country, and the fact that we paid to travel this murderer around the country.
certainly interesting. Watch, Senator, you mentioned you hope to chair the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate. You talked about Dr. Fauci. Other things that you really like to work with if that chairmanship comes through for you?
One of the things about Homeland Security is they oversee one of these groups that I believe has been censoring speech. It's called CISA, the Cyber Infrastructure Security Agency. And this agency has basically been meeting with Twitter and Facebook, and when conservatives have points of view, telling them, oh, no, that's misinformation, you need to take that down. And I really object to this, and I have legislation that I'll try to get through my committee that will say to the Homeland Security Department, you're not allowed to meet with anybody in the media to try to convince them to take down constitutionally protected speech. So I think there's a real First Amendment issue here. That's another thing we'll be looking closely at.
What are you hearing from people as you're traveling out about Kentucky, Senator? What do people talk to you about these days?
I think really just the contrast of the money we're sending overseas versus the money we could keep here at home. We had flooding issues in eastern Kentucky a year or two ago. We had tornadoes in western Kentucky. Now we have, you know, the severe flooding that was over mostly in Asheville and North Carolina. And I guess they don't understand how there doesn't seem to be enough money to take care of our own when we're sending $180 billion to Ukraine. And so I think this is still a big issue. And I think that people believe that Donald Trump's going to end the war and hopefully end all the damn money that we're sending over there. And so I'm looking forward to that. That's another big issue, and I'll do everything I can to help President Trump to end the war. And part of ending the war is just saying, you know, we're out of money and we just can't keep sending good money after bad to Ukraine.
You think maybe President Putin gets a message too from this whole deal and saying maybe it's time to come to the table and figure out a way to put this to bed and let it move forward?
I think so, because I think Donald Trump can tell both sides, you know, that this is what's going to happen. Right now, Russia is cut off from most international trade. They're still able to carry on trade, but there's a lot of impediments, and the economy has suffered. The war isn't good for them. They've lost hundreds of thousands of people. They were the aggressor, but I think Donald Trump can tell them, look, this can go on forever, or we can bring it to a halt, and he can tell the Ukrainians the same thing. And so I think he has the power, we have the might to negotiate a peace that really Joe Biden just wasn't capable of. He was basically, he'll go down in history as weak and corrupt. And with the final pardon, he'll never escape that. You know, so if he thinks his 50-year-long legislative history and vice president and president is somehow going to erase the rest of that, everyone who writes, he'll get about a paragraph or two in history, and everyone's going to say pardon is his criminal son.
You mentioned Ukraine. What about what's going on in the Middle East there, too? Do you see President Trump maybe getting involved in it and saying, hey, let's bring this to an end and find some peace there between Israel and Hezbollah?
I think he has the ability to speak to both sides and to help it come to an end. You know, I'm not saying that it'll be even in Ukraine done in a day, but I think he has the ability and the strength of character to get involved with these things where Joe Biden was just feckless. So I'm hopeful. Middle East is not a piece of cake as far as figuring out the solutions. But I think there that the war in Gaza, Israel's achieved a lot of its goals. Hezbollah seems to be calming down and sort of saying, well, maybe we can come to a ceasefire in Lebanon. Ultimately, there's a big peace deal to be had. And, you know, we have to convince and talk about to the people of Gaza, the people that are not terrorists in Gaza, they're just ordinary citizens. We need to tell them, look, prosperity, all the great things of modern living can come to you. All you have to do is say, you know, you're going to recognize Israel and no longer try to remove Israel, no longer try to attack Israel. If they quit attacking Israel, there's all kinds of Arab money surrounding Israel that could help the people in Gaza to get their economy started again. But frankly, they're not coming in as long as they think Hamas is coming back. So really, Hamas can't come back, but there have to be some reasonable, moderate minds in Gaza say, enough's enough. We don't like living this way.